Bye bye Donnie, your time is up, so you can take your lies and you can go get fucked. The people spoke and they spoke by mail, so pack your shit cause it's time to bail. Sorry buddy, but you lost it mate, and like everything true you'll call it fake. But who'd have thought you'd be such a wussy when America grabbed you by the pussy and threw you out after just one term, cause they finally realised that you're a germ. And COVID's not the only thing you spread, like lies, fear, hate, confusion and dread. And you told your own voters not to vote by mail in a global pandemic, and that was your fail. So shut up Donnie and practice what you preach, have some dignity and give your concession speech. Just tell everyone it's a conspiracy, blame your fall on American democracy, make up excuses and a million reasons from your shitty press conference at the Four Seasons. Get out there and go tell more lies, do what you do best and propagandize. No one's expecting you to be apologetic, but let me explain it using your logic. So you find more COVID when you do more tests, and you find more results when more votes get read. It's crazy, but that's how counting works. I can show you if you want to share your tax returns. You'll be fine, old mate, you survived impeachment, you survived coronavirus by injecting disinfectant. You've had 6 bankruptcies and 2 divorces, 200 days of tax-paid golf and golf courses. You survived the guilt of putting kids in cages and 26 sexual misconduct accusations. You've only got like 4,000 active lawsuits, so man up, Donnie, and hang up the boots. Fake news, fake hair, fake tan, fake smiles, fake offshore accounts in the Cayman Isles. You're a fake president with a fake first lady who's gonna take half of your fake ass money. And you finally succeeded in building your wall around the White House, and it's 10 feet tall. For someone who hates lockdown as much as you do, you were quick to lock yourself down in there, dude. Fake friends who used you to climb the ladder, and fake everything else that no longer matters. Fake supporters who piss on homeless people, you're the sworn enemy of the American Eagle, cause you tried to fool the world with no regret, and you're in $900 million debt. On the down low, if you know what I mean, like your old mate, Jeffrey Epstein. Nah, you'll be fine, you've told 20,000 lies and 230,000 people have died. Just like daddy's money gave you your start, Daddy Bannon will give you a job at Breitbart. Cause no one believes your bullshit rules, cause you're doing what you said you'd do when you lose. So see ya buddy, you gave it a crack, and now even Fox News hasn't got your back. So sorry old chump, but you're out of tricks, and you can suck 75 million dicks. The people voted someone else was hired, so sorry to say it, cunt, but you're fired.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you to the Van Buren Bros on YouTube. Go give them a follow and a like. They're the ones that put that together. Goodbye, Donnie Trump. On behalf of Donnie's everywhere and on behalf of citizens everywhere, we ain't got no more time for you. This is the 32nd installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting, available on all major podcast providers, on Facebook, and of course on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. This week's episode is brought to you by makegoodfood.ca, NordVPN, Fight TV, Air Vape, Just CBD, and eyeglasses.com. Go to our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Check out our sponsor page. Check out all the sales and special promotions available to you. Buy some shit. And when you're on our website, buy some merch like this hat, like this hoodie. Buy some stuff. I wear it every day. It's amazing. You need to wear some too. Go to godfathersofpodcasting.com. My name is Donnie DeSilva, and there's some bros in this house. There's some bros in this house. And since this is the 32nd installment of the show, it is appropriate to tell you that these men are the Magic Johnson and Claude Lemieux of online radio. It's Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell and my bro Danny O. Gentlemen,
I don't know which way to take that, yo.
I know. I don't know if I want to be magic or magnificent.
No, not Mario Lemieux. I said Claude, the dickhead.
Oh, you did say Claude. Yeah, yeah. No.
Oh, that's you for sure.
I'll take the HIV.
Claude, the talentless dickhead.
Isolate who that performed? Fucking statement right there, huh?
You caught Jesus. That one, did you?
Yeah, missed... you too.
What
he
was
ain't
it?
Got it? He really got it. He ain't got it. He has diet version. It's not the
yeah,
real thing.
Apparently it's a Magic Johnson. How the hell did you get it?
He's really magic.
He is magic. No trace of HIV whatsoever.
There you go.
Hey, I wasn't really going to talk about this, but for NHL fans out there, is Claude Lemieux the best example of a guy that was a total hack throughout his entire career until the playoffs started, and then he was a superstar? Is there a better example of that in any sport?
Well, answer NHL fans.
Wow. How about in any sport? Fans, let us know.
Ed Sprague?
He had one hit.
Hey, off the top of my head, you know, he did have a superstar like, home run.
Yeah, if you're going to use a Blue Jay reference like Pat Borders.
Peter Ng. Like
what other reference am I going to use?
Peter Ng?
Peter Ng.
Hey, man, don't think there's a better example. I'm going to just throw it out there. If you disagree, you can
email let us know.
Godfathersofpodcasting@gmail.com. You can get at us on Facebook, or you can Instagram at Godfathers of Podcasting.
We cannot gloss over that intro song. That was huge.
That was hype, right?
That was amazing. It was hilarious. And its hilarity falls in how true every lyric
every
was.
Line. And the lyricism was very well.
It was badass. It
the just, Van Buren Bros.
I am digging Buren that Bros. New Green Day album so much, man. That was just dope.
That was in Green Day. Oh. I can see why you got that mixed up. Hold on. I want to ask you.
Right.
It's been a couple days since the election finally came to an end. Mm. That was on Saturday. The three of us have not spoken since that happened, other than to say, yeah. So, question, where were you and what was your immediate thought when the news broke?
I think I was home and I just flipped on CNN because it just happens to be on when I turn the TV on. You know what I'm saying? It's on. Okay. It's on standby.
So you didn't have it on 24/7.
No, man. I know you were doing the 24/7 thing. I couldn't because the score didn't change for 2 days. And I'm like, I can't. This is like they're just repeating the same old shit. So let me do a check-in. You know what I mean? Let me look at the box score. And when they finally did it, I still didn't believe it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was still so much. Are they finished counting the votes? Is this official? Donnie hasn't conceded. Is this real? And when it finally started sinking in, because I tuned in for Kamala and Joe Biden's speech, their official, you know, victory speech. And they said a lot of shit that you do want to hear from people who have just gained power in the United States, especially the way they attacked or plan on attacking COVID. But the thing that struck me the most, and I shouldn't say I'm surprised. Surprise is the wrong word. I would just say further disgust me, is that in spite of everything that Donald Trump has said about other politicians, including those who he claims should just give it up and you know, concede when they lost. I think he was talking about Hillary and whoever else.
Right.
And he does exactly the opposite of what he tells people to do. And his followers continue to support and back any damn nonsense that comes out of his mouth or anyone from his campaign. And it's hilarious to me that even in a post-Donald Trump that we're not officially there yet, this shit's not going to end. He and his minions are going to be around to continue to spew their bullshit. And it amazes me that no proof, no evidence, no facts, no numbers, as was said in that song, can prove to them that his time has come. They're still on that shit.
The really frustrating thing to me is that there's already conversation about Trump saying, I'm just not going to leave. And there's already been discussion from people saying, you know, the Secret Service has no issue going in and removing a trespasser.
Is that right? This is going to be fun then. I hope he doesn't.
He's not. But the problem is by refusing to cooperate, there's a lot of transitionary stuff that's not happening. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, Trump is responsible right now to release a certain amount of budget so that Biden has the ability to put his cabinet in place.
Right.
Trump's not doing that.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
So everything is getting delayed. The government is going to be off to a shitball start if Trump doesn't cooperate.
Which gives him shit to talk about.
Which gives him shit to talk about when he has his new show on Fox and Friends.
Uh-huh. So,
no, it won't be on Fox and Friends. We're talking One America News, bro.
Maybe you'll have an article on Breitbart.
Breitbart.
So the whole thing is really stupid. And then someone on Instagram, maybe? I can't remember. Someone pointed out to me and refreshed my memory the last time that the United States had a one-term president.
Bushy.
George Bush Sr., right?
Yeah, the first one.
And not the
W.
Yeah, W. So W's concession speech.
HW.
HW, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Senior.
Senior.
Dad.
Daddy.
Yeah.
So I watched George Daddy's concession speech.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh my God. Like Bush took a lot of shit during his time, and his son obviously took even more shit during his time in office. But Senior took a lot of shit during his time, and people were not happy with the job he did in the 4 years. But you know what? His concession to Senator Clinton was so classy and so top shelf. You know, it was tagged with, "This is how you do it, Trump." Right? Yeah. It was, "Hey, this is a great day for our democracy. The people have spoken." And while it may not have, and he's speaking in front of his supporters, while it may not have been who you voted for, this is your leader now.
Yeah.
And I will cooperate fully to get him up to speed. He ran a great campaign. Sure. That's what you're supposed to do.
Totally. There's no chance Trump does that.
Never.
If you are a member of that club.
Oh.
Right? If you're a member of that club and thank you. If you're a member of that club of all of the former presidents, that's the thing, right? Inside of that, like, you got to remember, Trump doesn't even want to be part of that fucking club. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you're as we saw them fight back and forth and stuff like that, later on after they're retired, they're all like, "Hey, former presidents," and they hang out and they're part of that former president club.
Yeah, like
right?
Bush and Obama.
Trump ain't he ain't getting invited to that. Yeah, you saw it at the funeral at HW's funeral or whatever, right? Like the pushing and the fucking, everybody was out there hanging out and stuff like that. Future events, Trump is not getting invited to
this
that.
This has already started. He was asked to stay away from John McCain's funeral. Someone else we brought up on that show was someone who had an extremely classy speech after losing an election.
Sure.
And it is pathetic. And this is the point that I raised on last week's episode, I believe, and a number of other episodes when I keep saying things like, stop letting your political allegiance form your opinions without having some sort of thought about your own ideas. You can be Republican. We can have differing opinions about policy or what have you. But if you stand for this dude, this guy, Donald Trump, who is so crybaby, so childish, so idiotic that he will hurt the country in the process of trying to just save face, you're anti-American.
But Dan, here's what I've learned, and to an extent I agree with you, but to another side of me disagrees with you, and here's why. It's easy for us to sit here and go, like Hal Johnson said, or Hal Johnson was on the show last week, right?
Yeah.
Like Hal said, to my American friends and family, if you voted for Trump, I'm disowning you. I'm done with you. Right? Yeah. He said that on this show.
You were dropped on your head as a baby.
Lose my number. But there's another piece to this that I've learned over the last month or so. The gross majority of Trump supporters are not the fanatic creep monsters. They are the non-politically informed people who have been brought up to be Republican because their daddy, their granddaddy, and their great granddaddy were Republican. And all they know is what they read in their echo chamber on social media, whether it's a meme or whether it's whatever. That's all they know. The economy was at an all-time high. Unemployment was at an all-time high, all-time low. And they don't realize, first of all, that those things were set in place by the previous administration. Also don't realize things like the economy was not at an all-time high. The stock market was. There's all sorts of other factors there. Oh, Biden, why would you vote for a pedophile? There is not one case in 48 years of public service of an allegation, a charge, anything. Okay? So,
but why do you give these people a blight?
Because there's a degree of ignorance. And I don't think there's a difference between being a racist and being a part of that clan, to use a term, and just being flat out ignorant and not informing yourself. Because when someone says to me, "Well, Biden's just the lesser of two evils." Well, look, Joe Biden's not perfect. He's not the best candidate that they had from the Democratic Party to represent the party. Dan was pissed when he won the nomination.
Hold on. Let's go back very quickly
but
to
he's
2016.
Light years better than what we
totally
have.
And that's what I'm saying. You don't have to be racist. It doesn't even have to be about race. The just the demeanor of the president of the United States is such that he should be someone who or she represents the entire nation and the benefit or the good of the entire nation. And everything he does and says is consistently self-serving. So take race out of it. Just the man himself. I've actually had people argue on his behalf by saying such things as he might be a trash human, but he's a good president. How is that possible? You can't be a trash human being and be a good president of a country.
But in theory, I agree that you could be a shitty person and be good at your job. I don't have a problem with that sentiment.
You might be able to run a business well and turn a profit by shitting on everyone underneath
you. That's what they're looking for.
And there's no evidence that he is the brilliant businessman that his campaign was built on 4 years ago. Tid, you were going to say something. Yeah. You get the last word on this topic.
Here's the bottom line. I don't even remember what I was going to say before you fuckers cut me off. But at the end of the day, everybody in the United States, and not everybody, I mean at least half, because remember, this thing was like split down the fucking middle for hairs at the end of the day, right? Which makes me believe two things. Number one, I think that a lot of those people that were out there protesting and rioting and doing that, all of this anti-Trump thing, I think at the end of the day, some of them may have actually voted for Trump, because if they didn't, it actually eliminates their future standing and their beliefs going forward. They're out of jobs at this point. Number two, I think that at the end of the fucking day, the right guy won. And all we have to do is just remember that we have to move forward as an American fucking country, as an American group of people, and try to make it better for everybody. Is this over? Not by a long shot, because it's made human beings realize that in person, we treat each other a lot differently than we do behind the ballot box.
Joe Biden, this imported Portuguese beer.
What the fuck
is for
is
you.
That? What is fuck? What is that?
Superbock,
man.
You get two bases for that?
If this was our previous...
You almost made me spit up all over my
You almost
mic.
Spit Superbock, bro?
Oh, man. You were going to make a Bockel joke, Dan?
Well, sort of. I mean, we were talking off air about our previous podcast, and had we been on the previous podcast, I'm pretty sure you know what joke I would have made.
What was it, Dan?
Well, it rhymes with Bock, and you've put a super Bock to your mouth, so you figure it out.
That's a sound that a gigantic rooster makes.
What's the sound that a Dan makes?
Bock.
Nice.
Next, I want to touch on a completely different story, because we've talked about Trump enough for the last few weeks.
Yeah, and he's going to be gone. So let's just relish.
I have a bigger story that I want to loop back to.
Bigger.
Here's just something light and a little ridiculous. Okay. A week or so ago, I was shocked beyond belief when I heard that 76-year-old Tony La Russa had been hired by the Chicago White Sox to be their new coach, their skipper,
manager,
their manager. Yeah.
The guy
coach
from the Karate Kid?
Not Daniel LaRusso.
Oh.
Tony La Russa.
Daniel, sorry.
Who I'm going to tell you, during his heyday as a manager with the Oakland A's, I fucking hated this.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Everybody did.
The quintessential cocky, arrogant piece of shit. And then I just saw a story earlier today about how La Russa, 76-year-old La Russa. First of all, I think it's ridiculous that a baseball team hires a 76-year-old manager with a bunch of young guys on the team.
Why?
Well,
the United States did.
Yeah.
The United States did.
Yeah. Okay, but you know what? But Biden's not got a 162 game schedule.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. It's harder to be a manager in the majors and run the country.
And wear a skin tight outfit. Yeah, man. That's a different flex. But that being said, having to relate to players, the fact that the game has changed so much since he last managed, there's a lot of factors. Sure. All that being said, I did not know until charges came out earlier today. What? That back in February of this year in Phoenix, Arizona, La Russa was arrested with a DUI. And what? When and the story came out today that when this happened, he was belligerent to the officers that pulled him over. And he said, quote, "Do you see my ring, brother? Wow. I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother." And he was beyond annoyed.
You're not talking about Hulk Hogan? This is Tony La Russa?
Tony La Russa.
He said that shit?
And I was beyond annoyed with the fact that not only did he say this in all sincerity, and he was frustrated that they dared arrest him with a DUI. Someone said to me, "You know how many times this happened over the course of his lifetime?"
Yeah, and man.
It worked.
Yeah, man.
And it worked.
Well, this is what I was going to say. It speaks to a bigger story of people who have that privilege. It's not just white privilege. It's rich privilege. It's like, you know who I am privilege. We all know that they get away with all kinds of shit.
Athlete and superstar privilege.
Yes, let's absolutely. Call
it what it is.
It's, yeah.
It goes beyond white privilege.
I know it does.
Like, I have a certain kind of privilege, but let's face facts, right? Based on how I look, I'm going to get beat down too,
well, that's
right?
That's the point. Him showing his rings.
Yeah, that's some bullshit, right? Yeah. But if I'm telling you straight up, if I'm driving in a car and all of a sudden I get pulled over and I'm Dennis Rodman, I worry a little bit less.
So here's a question. In what venue?
In certain cases.
So it's a superstar thing, man.
It exists. That was my point.
And these guys.
And I'll say
that's
this
some bullshit.
If this had happened in Oakland or St. Louis, where he had so much success, right. I bet you we would never have heard about it.
Exactly.
But no. He was in Phoenix, where he's
definitely not in St. Louis. Let's think about that, man. That's Mars shot.
And those two cities, he doesn't have.
And he had a lot of success there with the Cardinals.
He doesn't have to tell them who he is.
No.
And
that's the fucked up thing. I can only imagine what dudes have gotten away with worse than that. Because
it goes on even a smaller scale. You see it every day. You're driving down, you see that person who's got that like that police cap, like they gave to some charity or something like that for the cops, and they got that police cap in their back windshield, or like a cop who works, he's got that little something, that little signal that says, "Hey, when I get pulled over, oh hey, look, here's my Teamsters ring that I have on my hand right now. You know, maybe this wallet has 20 in it, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. You find my ID." Like, there's some bullshit out there, man.
So my question to Canadian hip hop legend and independent wrestling's favorite son, have either of you ever pulled the "Do you know who I am, bro?" on anyone ever in any situation? Even if you didn't say it, you thought it, like, who the fuck do you think you are right now?
I've legit never done that.
Come on, Dan.
No. You think you don't know me well enough to know I don't run that shit?
I just want to see if you'll tell a story.
Nah.
Well, not even once, bro.
I've had the shit work without me having to do that. I used to roll with a dude who was trying to help me work my career and stuff. And you know that a lot of people in the business talk a lot of smack. Who you know, what he can do, how he... So we were going to this club one night and he was talking about, "Don't worry, we're in there." And something just told me, like, I don't know, I don't feel fully confident that we're on the guest list. You talk a big game. We show up at this place and sure enough, we get to the door and the person who's running the thing's like, "Yo, sorry, I can't let you in." He's like, "Yo, man." He's trying to argue his way in and talk about who he is. Dude looks at me, the guy he's arguing with, and goes, "Yo, Daniel, what are you saying? Yo, you're in, bro." And I went in, and dude, who big shot, was left at the door. I had to leave him, guy. I said, "Nah, man, you talk too much of a game. You so dope, you can get in." So I've had people recognize me and that kind of stuff, but I've never been like, "Yo, you don't know who I am?" I would have walked out.
Tid, you ever had a "bro, do you know who I am" moment?
To me doing it to somebody?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. Never me doing it to somebody. I've had it happen to me.
I know
on that exact tip. On that exact tip.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't want to say names, but winter is coming. And he sent one of his boys across the street to a club that I was working, and it was like, "Yo, my boy Darren wants to get into your club, and he's over there. And I said, no, why don't you go talk to my boy Mag, who's running the door across the street. Right. He went over and talked to him. Mag was like, no, no, go back across the street, and this is what you got to say to him.
We used to call that doorman ping pong. That was amazing. I remember those days.
As soon as you would show up, bro, I had Tony Little show up and try to give me a $5 bill to just walk out of his car and walk into the club. Right? I looked at it and said, no, here's 3 drink tickets and your money back, because you're going to need that to tip the bartender. Go give him a good time. All right? Sad. Some of these people are pathetic, man.
Back in the late 90s, when Ted and I were working at the front door of Toronto's #1 nightclub, there were many times. Ted was the head doorman there, and there were many, many, many times where I personally witnessed somebody come up to Ted. He might have been a celebrity, he might have been an athlete, or he might have just been some douchebag Euro trash, you know, that just thought he was somebody, and he would literally look up at Ted and go, bro, do you know who I am?
Right.
And
I hate that shit.
Depending on the night, Ted would always have a clever response.
Ted always has a clever response. I'm convinced 99% of the time he ripped them.
A lot of times he would make fun of the guy. The guy didn't even know he was being punked.
Yeah,
that's my favorite. Yeah, no, you are.
You're a hardcore douchebag to pull that shit. I don't care who you are. Right? I don't care who you are. You're whack to be pulling that shit.
Yeah. All right.
Whack to be pulling that shit. But
another.
We got it.
Oh, what?
I don't know what you were gonna say. It's important that we mention. We're talking about
beatboxing.
We're talking about legends. You know, we got to show some respect to a Canadian legend we just lost.
Oh, I was going to go there, bro.
Okay, all right. Just making sure. Oh, I can't tee anything up. Sorry. Do you know who you are?
No.
You're talking about Howie Meeker?
Yeah.
No, it was the fifth littlest hobo, passed away this week.
Tremendous.
Of course, game show icon Alex Trebek.
Yeah. Sure.
Sudbury, Ontario's favorite son.
Yeah.
Passed away this past week. I actually spoke to some people who were tweeting and Facebooking and doing all that stuff, and they had zero clue that Trebek was even Canadian. Like, right. Not even a hint.
You know,
not
why?
Even a thought.
You want to know why?
Because
Sudbury, and it's not really Sudbury's favorite son. That goes to Mark Bartolucci, El Tornado.
Tornado?
Is Sudbury's favorite
son. So it's
son.
El Tornado and then Alex Trebek?
100% by like 60% of the margin up there, right?
Because look, I love Bartolucci, but I don't know if I agree.
Hey, when was the last time Trebek was in Sudbury?
Or wore tights.
Right? What have you done for me lately?
Let me say this about Alex Trebek. Over the last couple of years, he's been dealing with his cancer battle. I will say, I have not seen many people in my life, Alex Trebek and my father, who faced that type of odds, that type of illness, with that type of straight face and said, I ain't scared.
Yeah, man. It's like he didn't
till the last day.
I thought he had the magic, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, he was doing the show.
Yeah.
Up until they still have episodes that they haven't aired yet. You know, it hits me a little bit because, you know, my grandmother loved Jeopardy, and that was one of the things I would do with her. You know, long before she passed, we'd watch Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy together. And that was one of the things that really kept her mind sharp. It's interesting, man, because, you know, Jeopardy has actually been like recommended as like for you know, for people maybe, you know, suffering from dementia or like anything. It's like, it's actually like it's mental memory, medicine, you know? And I was always so proud to be able to play that with my grandmother. And I had to post that I really hope she gets to see Jeopardy live taping in heaven, man, because Jeopardy always reminds me of grandma. And it just kind of, I know Alex Trebek lived to be 80. I'm grateful for that. But it just feels, it's clearly the end of an era. I'm not sure what they do with Jeopardy, but, you know, it just reminded me of grandma so much. And Alex Trebek was a class act all the way.
To answer your question, the rumor is that Ken Jennings will step in as host.
Wow.
Of Jeopardy.
Really?
And also, yeah. I wanted to, and that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Interesting.
The thing I wanted to ask you, Dan, if you remember, I know this isn't really your skis, but if you remember, for a while, Jeff Probst was hosting Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
I remember that.
And one of my favorite episodes of Rock and Roll Jeopardy was Howard Stern show producer Gary Delabate, Baba Booey, versus Weird Al Yankovic.
Okay.
Who you love, right?
Yes.
So here's
and I've met him.
How do you think you... My bro, Dio, how do you think you would do in a game of hip hop Jeopardy?
Oh, I let me tell you something. Ooh. I smash hip hop Jeopardy.
Because I have an opponent lined up for you to do that on the show.
I would be happy. Okay. I take that challenge. Let me tell you tell you a true story.
It ain't Tid.
Way back when Rap City
I can hold
was
my
on,
own though.
Man.
Ooh, you just gave me a thought. Hip hop Jeopardy. There are two guests that we have been talking to about appearing on this show that are both former Much Music VJs.
Yes.
All right.
And both, actually, there's three former Much Music VJs that we've been talking to come on this show. And all three highly skilled in hip hop trivia. You think you could take all three of them?
That would be tough because the people you're talking about have a few years on me in history in the game.
You backpedaling?
Do it. You backpedaling?
No. I'll
take the challenge, son.
I will take the challenge.
Oh my God, Tid, we'll lay cash on each question. Like we'll make our own side wagers.
100%. Hey, we planned this right. We put out some prop bets.
Yeah.
Right?
Rap City once had a contest.
We're
going
to have to put
Canada's...
Dan on a timer, though.
And a stool.
I was going to say, make sure you have one of them, them buzzers.
Like chess.
We have a budget around here, asshole.
Well, what kind of timer are you talking about?
Because no, it's going to be an air horn into the mic. Mac!
Going to be the this is
Rap City once had a contest called Canada's Biggest Hip Hop Fan, and I entered it. I was called to the club before.
Did you win?
I was their alternate. I was going to say alternate. So they had three people, and if one of the three didn't show up, I was going to play.
What do you mean? They had a darker guy?
No, it's because they didn't want to keep painting down.
These are all very funny short jokes.
and light skin jokes.
I'm trying to never get the light skin jokes. Yes, I'm light. I'm short. Ha ha, I get it. But what I'm trying to tell y'all is that I was better than those three motherfuckers. And of course, I didn't get to go on the show. They all showed
you
up.
You will get your chance.
I have been waiting for this. And real
Let's
talk.
Do hip-hop.
Real talk.
You're a regular Journey song.
I told my grandmother when she was alive, I said, yo, one of these days I'm going to be on a game show.
That's the one.
So if this is it, I am ready to go, man. I've been waiting for this day.
I'm going to be Donnie Trebek. Tid is going to be the Vegas house placing odds on you motherfuckers.
Man.
And this is what's going on. We need a betting website out there to sponsor this bit. And we are going to have some fun.
I'm going to be Vanna half white.
Who was EPMD's original DJ?
P.
Exactly. That was the question that none of those contestants knew. And
Spinderella.
No.
I don't know. Are we ready, guys?
I challenge everyone out there to answer online.
I think it was Steve. Did Steve tell you that perchance?
Yeah. It wasn't Steve.
That was a Flight of the Conchords reference that you totally dropped, asshole.
I know his it was. I'm not selling anything you say tonight.
Fuck you.
His name was DeAndre.
Get out of here, Donnie. Your time is up.
Yeah.
Wrong guy.
What's the line from the Lebowski? Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Shut up, Donnie. I know. I heard it my whole life. Because it is time for the big hello. Our featured guest tonight has been absolutely blowing up over the last month in the mainstream media and the podcast circuit, having conducted dozens and dozens of interviews over the last few weeks, and it's easy to understand why. Her second book was recently put on sale online and in stores and is titled The Good Stripper, a memoir of lies, loss, and lap dances. It's the story of a young woman who went from theater school to marriage to motherhood while leading a double life as an exotic dancer and suffering through the tragic deaths of her mother, father, and brother while coping with an eating disorder and feeling sexually exploited by her ex-husband. But this is not a sob story. This is a success story, because despite the hardship that she has faced, the battles that she has endured, this woman is the picture of positivity. She's an absolute ball of energy, a non-stop dancing machine, and fucking fierce at 50. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting, my friend, perpetual motion personified, the vociferous and vivacious Marcy Warren.
Wow. Wow. That's quite the intro.
The big hello.
Hello.
Hello. We're out of time.
You ain't. You are not 50. Stop that noise.
Oh, I am 50.
Damn.
Here's the, but Dan, here's the funny part. She's the same age as Ted.
Yeah, you fuckers never say this shit to me, right?
Because you look 60.
I thought.
That is
someone
that
had to
is
drop it.
Absolutely about right there, yeah.
And you feel 90.
Hey,
you don't dance. I'm not like as, she does.
I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm at least good once.
Actually, now that I think about it, you challenged Dan to a dance off last week.
Did
no,
you?
You're gonna have to
on
pull
this
up
show.
That tape.
I can pull it up, but you know what? If you want to have a dance off, you can challenge Marcy, because she literally never stops dancing.
Let's
that
go.
It's true. It's very tough for me to be sitting here right now. And
really?
I'm not
I could beatbox if you want to, like, start, you know what I'm saying?
Don't encourage me. Don't
okay.
You have no idea who you're talking about.
I do know. I read a chapter, and I want to see Cassidy go.
Oh, stop it. No.
I actually have a question. Did you say she's gone?
Yeah, well, I mean,
kind of. Well,
let's set the table for those
okay,
who
ahead,
not
man.
Picked up a copy of the book. Right. I know I teed it up a little bit in the intro, but the book talks about, Dan just referenced Cassidy. That was mm-hmm. your persona. That was your onstage personality. That was the way that you lived when you were trying to find a way to make a living as a soccer mom.
Can I clarify?
Yeah, tell us.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, because it's okay. So the book is The Good Stripper, a soccer mom's memoir of lies, loss, and lap dances. And the dancing part is it was part of this time. I did it off and on for a few months, but it was part of what I called my crazy time. Mm-hmm. And that lasted several years. And that was when I lived sort of a double life. I did live a double life. When it was where I had been through a ton of trauma, and it was too much, and I didn't have the support that I needed around me. And some people turn to drugs, and some people turn to alcohol, and some people turn to spending money or whatever. That's not where I went. And for me, it was just, I became sort of very disconnected from my body, while also being really super hyper-focused on my body through my eating disorder and sex stuff and dancing. And so I had this double life of being this, I tried to be the best mom I could to toddlers, while also living as like a kind of a vixen. And it wasn't a conscious decision, like, okay, I'm going to be Cassidy. It just kind of happened where I felt, it's funny because I was completely out of control and I knew it, but I also felt kind of in control as this other personality.
Yeah.
Okay. So why the name Cassidy?
Yeah, you know, honestly, you know what it is? When I was a teenager, I remember watching some
Sean Cassidy
movie. No, it wasn't Sean Cassidy.
Sean Cassidy.
It wasn't, but I did love Sean Cassidy. But no, it wasn't. It was there was a young actress named Cassidy. I think her name was Cassidy Ray. And I always thought she was really pretty. And okay. I think she had like curly hair. And so I think in my mind, I always wanted to be pretty, and I never thought I was pretty enough. And so I liked that, stuck with me for, I guess it was like 20 years. And then that was what I chose.
I just funny. Love that it rhymes with ass titty.
Oh, Dan. Jesus Christ.
Sorry. We were talking about our old show before. And
he can't help. He's trying
can
to think of
that
rhymes.
To rewrite? Like, yo, Dan.
It does rhyme with it.
Yeah, it does.
Asking about Ryan. Here's my question for you.
You know, Danny L. Ryan, yeah, shut the fuck up.
I actually had a serious performance question for you because I'm actually a musician and I talk a lot about the way I assemble records one after the other. And what I thought was kind of fascinating of the many different things that we need to unpack about your book is that in the introduction, you mentioned the song titles that you would use for your first, second, and third dance because there's three dances as part of your performance. And I found it interesting coming from the artist's perspective, and I was wondering if you could shed some light on why you chose what song and why you placed them in the order you did, because aside from the fact that it's exotic dancing and stuff, there's still clearly a performance, and I want you to speak to the art to choosing your songs and ordering them. If
or did you or was it an art to you, or what, were you completely disassociated?
Well, that's it. I didn't see it as art, and I also wasn't doing it, just to also clarify earlier, I wasn't the doing what I could to provide for my family. My ex-husband was providing for my family. It was trauma for me. But I did enjoy, like Donnie said, I love to dance. I've danced since I was 3 years old. So being on stage, I always say I hated getting off stage and having to try to sell myself to people.
Yeah.
I hated that part. But the dancing, I remember when I started, I'll answer your question in a sec, but I just remember at one point, this girl coming next to me who had started, and she said, I had just gone off stage, and she said, how long did it take you before you had the guts to dance on stage? And I went, what do you mean? What are you doing? She said she'd been working for like a few months and she hadn't had the courage yet. And I'm like, I didn't know. That was like the first thing I did.
Yeah, that was the natural thing for you.
The easiest thing I did. So when it came to first of all, I remember at the bar that I danced at, we weren't allowed rap. That was like a thing. There was no rap. Okay. I don't remember what the, And then
it's called systemic racism.
Yeah, pretty, it felt wrong at the time, actually. And this is a long time ago. But so I would pick songs. So my first song is the danciest, I guess, you know?
Okay.
And you're wearing the most clothing. And so I would pick a fun song to dance, something that you go out and you're just like, I'm here kind of thing.
Okay.
And so that was like, I start my book with Bootylicious by
Jesse Jones. As you mentioned,
And then it sort of gets progressively kind of slower.
Okay.
And more seductive.
There is an art to it.
There is. And it was songs, to be honest, it was songs that made me feel good.
Okay.
So put me in the mood.
Okay.
Cool. I watched strippers like song 3 was like Queensryche. And it was one of the coolest things that I'd ever seen in my life, because you don't exactly come, because it is just that there is this, like, there's this stereotypical, like, you're going to get song 1, song 2, song 3, lap dance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you go into a strip joint, and there's certain songs that you're like, oh, I know what this song is. I know where I am in this set. Right. But to walk into a place and to hear music that wasn't like typically what you would hear in a strip joint, it was like somebody actually got to pick their own stuff.
Although for me, it was tricky because I wasn't hired. I was freelance because I was a mom and I didn't need to be there. It was very different. So I was kind of like, I was very afraid of stepping on anyone's toes, and, you know, if they had their music, and I was kind of like, just what isn't crazy someone using, and is it okay if I, you know? So
I remember, going back, and probably, Marcy, around the same time that you were doing this in your life, Tid and I were working together on another radio show, and we've talked about this on this program before, where one of our big sources of revenue was we would get booked to do public appearances at different strip clubs. Mm-hmm. Tid and I were regularly being brought out to one club as the celebrity guest judges for Naked Oil Wrestling, where they were doing, what was it, Tid? Like a $5,000 grand prize, like every Friday or something. And then
insanity.
I remember when we sat there one night, the first night we did this, leading up to the start of the matches, the ladies are walking up to Tid, myself, and whoever the third person was on that night, because they'd bring in another celebrity, a rotating person. They would just try to curry favor, the girls would, right, to try and get us to vote for them. And I remember Tid made a joke, and you may not even remember this, Tid, but at the time, Tid had recently started working as a professional wrestler, and he said, the two most self-conscious people in the world, strippers and wrestlers. And I thought that was one of the most poignant, intelligent comments that I had ever heard. And it made me think about your comment when you said, I never felt pretty enough. Cassidy was the pretty girl. And then it made me think about your eating disorder. And I'm thinking, did the eating disorder come before this life or as a part of this life? And do you think from what you witnessed that there was a lot of that self-consciousness driving some of these girls towards drugs, towards, you know, shit habits.
Okay, well, there's a lot of questions in that question.
To unpack.
Yeah, no, and but let me say that, okay, I don't even know which one to answer first, but I'm gonna, okay, so.
Freestyle.
All right, first thing, the eating disorder. No, I mean, the eating disorder started when I was 17 years old. So, okay. And I danced when I was 30 something.
Okay.
Although I was 34, but Cassidy was like 28. So
right.
It depends.
Of course you are.
But, so no, my eating disorder started, I say all the time, I shouldn't have had any issues. I had a great family and I was loved and protected and encouraged and all that. And then my brother, who was everything to me, got sick and died when I was 17. And he was 21 and my father was gone. So he was like everything to me. And when he died, I wasn't expecting it. I was in the middle of writing an English exam and got pulled out of class. And my whole life changed because at first I thought, wait a second. At that age, you're supposed to feel invincible. And here my amazing, beautiful, athletic brother just died. How does that? Okay, so all of a sudden the world became very, very scary and completely out of my control. The other thing is he was such a good person and everybody loved him. And who was I? I was just Marcy. So I felt that he should have been here and it should have been me that had died. So I, from that moment, it became two things. It was, it should have been me. I don't deserve to be here. Okay. And it became, well, I can't control what's going on. I can't control anything that's going on in my life. What can I control? What's the one thing you can control is your body. That's the one thing. And it started, I remember people when he was sick and people bringing food to the hospital. I was like, I'm not going to eat it. Because I felt I was doing something. By not eating, I was doing something. And then I, unfortunately, I also had a doctor who was very messed up and told me to lose weight, but I didn't have to lose weight. And that set me off. So when I was 17, that's when my eating disorder started. Now, going to the dancing part. Now, again, so that's 17. But in that time, you know, my stepfather was arrested for major crimes. My mom died. I had two miscarriages. Then I almost lost another baby. Then I got pregnant and ended up in the hospital for 2 months with kidney failure and respiratory failure and a 25% chance of survival, lost another baby. There was a lot that I was going through. And then things in my marriage changed and got complicated. So when I started dancing, it was because at that point I felt very, from going from a little girl who felt very loved and very protected, I felt very unloved, unwanted, and unprotected. I didn't have anyone left to protect me. I always said my brother, I say this all the time, but my brother was the invisible armor I wore out in the world, and my mom was my safe place to come home to. When I lost my brother, I had no armor. When I lost my mom, I had no home. I was alone, and I had my partner, who at that point had been great for a lot of my life. At that point, was not the support I needed.
Yeah.
And I feel saw my vulnerability as an opportunity. And so when it comes to the dancing part, again, that was part of a bigger problem,
right?
Because I started sharing myself in a way that I shouldn't. I wish I hadn't. But I will say this: when it comes to dancing, I can't say what other girls. I wasn't in it long enough. I didn't meet enough girls. I can't speak for anyone else.
Sure.
But for myself.
Why do you say that? You said that you in a way that you wish you hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you regret the choices that you've made?
Some.
Like up to this point?
Some. Do I regret the dancing? No. I mean, would I have done it had I not had all this trauma that took me really. I was disconnected and I was not in my right mind 100%. Okay. And I wasn't sleeping for days and I wasn't eating. And would I have done it? No. But do I regret it? No. Why would I regret it? It's something I did. I wasn't hurting anybody. My husband knew about it. Like there were no secrets. No.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't being good to myself. As I said, I would put my kids to bed, go to the club, come back at 4 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't doing drugs. I was going to my locker and drinking my power shake, and I was working out at the gym. So I'd come back, I'd go to the gym, work out for 2 hours, go to the grocery store, pick up stuff for my kids, come back, take a shower, get my kids up. So I wasn't being good to myself.
Wow.
But I was sort of trying to be good for everybody else. But I don't know. I kind of lost my
job. Yeah,
that's okay. Sorry. I wanted to ask you.
Sorry to forget. So I regret that. So I don't regret that so much. What I regret is I did things. I allowed myself, because I started to feel bad about certain things. Okay. I felt that, felt like it should have been me. I didn't feel like I was a good person. And here I was doing these things. And I didn't regret it at the same time. How good a mom was I being if I was out dancing or whatever? So I felt that I let myself be used in ways I shouldn't have. I let people disrespect me in ways that I shouldn't have. And then I ended up indirectly hurting other people. And that is something that I will never get over, and I'm okay with that. I should never get over the fact that I took part in anything that hurt somebody else. That I understand why I did it, but I'm okay with always feeling bad about it. Okay.
So Marcy, I'm not a therapist, but I play one on a podcast. So let me preface this by saying I'm not trying to psychology you, but I am trying to relate in a different way. That I like to use psychology as a verb.
I was going to say, is that a verb? Okay.
It's a verb for me.
That's his pickup line.
Yeah, right. I'm not trying to psychology.
I'm gonna try it. Guaranteed, I'll get slapped.
Here's my thing. I myself and my boys here, they know in great detail a lot of trauma that I've dealt with, especially over the last 5-6 years. And part of my personal coping has been compartmentalizing to the point of disassociation, to the point of that didn't happen to
me. Blocking it out.
Well, not even just blocking it out. It's almost like that didn't happen to this guy.
Right.
That happened to that guy.
Right.
And
and
so when I read up on this, it's a lot of the symptoms, a lot of that coping is akin to almost like a split personality disorder, which I therapize and I go and I see professionals and I get psychology.
Therapeutalized, Donnie.
I therapeutalize. Yes. Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, rectally. But
raise your hand if you've been diagnosed.
Yes. But what I'm saying is I was very concerned for a few years that I was going through some kind of split personality disorder. And I've had therapists say to me, no, you're actually just very skilled at compartmentalizing, but you do need to deal with your trauma. You need to deal with your shit. Did you ever feel, either while it was happening or during the writing of this book, that, holy fuck, I really was a different person to the point where I feel like, you know, I don't even recognize who that girl was.
So there's two parts that I get. So the first part is, there were times that I looked in the mirror and literally said out loud, who are you? Like I felt so disconnected. And it sounds so cliche, but it's like you see in the movies where you're there, I would be doing things and almost be watching myself doing them. However, this is what's interesting. I was convinced after that, that I was like bipolar. I was convinced. I read something that's like, from a magazine, if you answer yes to three of these things,
right?
And I answered like yes to nine. So
those are scientifically perfect.
Very.
Don't worry.
So, but wait.
It's
so
called
Cosmo. Yeah, pretty much. So I had, I was sure that I was, and I remember just a few years ago, I thought, but then I started eating better, and then I started sleeping, and then I was better, but I still wondered. And I remember going to see a therapist that I saw, and I said, I think I have this thing, and she's like, you don't. You just had a lot of trauma. And I was like, no, but I think. And then she was like, hey, talk to your doctor. Spoke to my doctor. He's like, no, you don't. Like, I'm like, I don't, but I think I was convinced. So then he said, you can go get assessed. And I went to the hospital. And I sat. They said it was going to be half an hour. I sat with the nurse for 2 hours.
Wow.
Okay.
Which is very validating, actually. And what he said was, no. He said, this is what I do for a living. And he goes, there was no issue there. He said, what it was. He said, okay, you tell me when you think you were crazy. I would tell him, and he'd say, okay, well, what was going on at that time? And I'd say, well, this happened and this happened. He goes, okay, give me something else. And I would tell him, and he'd say, well, what happened? And said, well, this one was arrested and that one died. And he's like, oh, okay. And what they said was, listen to your life. Like, you were reacting. Mm-hmm. Had you not reacted, then that would be more of an issue.
Sure.
So it was just, this was my way of dealing with the trauma that looked different than the way most people do. But just again, to speak to something you just said, Donnie, which is important, is there were the two parts of me in the sense that this is why the big part of my book is that, so once I got out of it, and I got out of it because I had one morning and I talk about it was my hardest chapter to write. And I got pretty much slapped in the face with the truth. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And I got out of it. And I was great. And I got healthy and I got treatment for the eating disorder. And I started a program for kids with body image. And I mean, I was going to schools and amazing things. But then the problem was, it was now that I was healthy, I had to face all the things that I did when I wasn't healthy. Mm. So I compare it to almost like if I was an alcoholic and I was driving drunk and smashed my car into someone's living room. And I got out and I felt bad at the time and I apologized. But then I went and I got healthy and I got sober.
Yeah.
And then I realized, holy shit, I just destroyed that person's house. Mm. And now it's much harder to deal with when you're completely sober.
Right.
And that was what happened is I was doing all these great things and everyone was telling me how great I was that I was helping all these kids. But I was thinking, but you don't know. You don't know what I used to do. You don't know how bad a person I really am. No. So that nearly destroyed me. Because
is that a laugh of relating?
No, it was a Chris D'Elia thing because I was sitting there going, you know what it isn't? You know what it isn't? You don't know. You know what it isn't?
Oh,
I like Chris D'Elia. That's okay. I like Chris D'Elia.
Is there still a sense of forgiving yourself that you haven't gone through yet, Marcy? Because in some of what I read, it felt, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that some of the things that you were doing maybe at the time was cathartic. I'm pretty sure even writing the book helped you to overcome and deal with some of those things of your past. But even in having finished the book and now talking about it and hearing you talk right now, are there still things that you kind of point to yourself at that you're still upset with that you haven't fully forgiven yourself about?
Well, it's like I said, there's the there are things that I did that I look again, that I look back at and go, I never would have done that, but cool, kind of cool. And right. Then there is, yeah. Yes, it's like I said, I will always feel guilty about a couple of things.
Okay.
Now, but there's a difference between I let the shame go. I'll feel guilty about it, which is okay. It does. I don't drown in it. I understand
okay.
it. I say that there's. I have an explanation, not an excuse.
Okay.
And so I get it. I understand now why I did the things I did that I feel bad about. But I'll always feel bad about them, and it's always hard for me to talk to. And I'm not thrilled that my kids will know that I did it.
Mm.
But I have forgiven myself. That's the whole reason I wrote it too, is that I had to forgive myself for
okay.
the shit that I did because I was not living the right. What's the point of forgiving myself if I'm going to live in the past and beat myself up over it?
Yeah.
It's a waste of time.
With that being said, you could have written the entire manuscript as a healing process, as a catharsis, like Dan said, and then put it in a drawer and said,
right,
I feel better. So
yeah.
When you'd make the decision to say, fuck it. Put it out there.
Yeah.
Amazon, bookstores,
yeah.
This shit is everywhere.
Yeah.
And you, my dear, are like literally doing multiple interviews a day. Your phone is ringing off the hook. You've got like television, radio,
podcast.
Everyone is contacting you because, first of all, it's a great fucking title, but everyone is contacting you and wanting to know the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is, why take that leap and say, fuck it, I'm going to take this catharsis and share it. And I guess the part two to that question is, it's easy to say everyone, but who is your intended audience with this? Like, is there an intended audience that you say, this is a cautionary tale, or this is a, this is a slice of life, or this is just, you know, my
women
story.
Empowerment.
It's a
rock and roll story.
It's a success story. Yeah. It's whatever. Like, who's your audience and what made you decide to say, you know,
I'm not going
to keep it on my hard drive.
Yeah. You know, I think I've learned that's just, I got to a point. I've always been outspoken, but I think I got to a point I don't know if it was age. I don't know what it was. When I was just like, this is it. Like, I feel like we judge everybody and everyone, I felt judged. And I thought, if someone's going to judge me, then at least let them know what they're doing. Let them judge me for the right thing.
Give them the facts.
Well, that's it. And I really did feel, you don't understand, like for years, I was afraid of my secrets coming out. For years, I was afraid I would be at the grocery store with my kids and some man would come over to me and recognize me from something. And I was terrified about that. And that's a horrible way to live. I still, to this day, will have somebody call me who knew me way back when, who saw my number, and I have to still deal with that, which is ridiculous. So I think for me, I was so afraid of it. I said, I got to a point where I'm like, I'm not going to be afraid of it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it out there. So if anybody, there's no snickering behind my back. There's no somebody who knows somebody who knows something from it. Fuck it. Like, here it is, I'm telling you, and I'm not going to be ashamed of it anymore. So you can't hurt me with it because I'm owning it now. And if I'm owning it, what are you going to do? The amazing thing is that I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know who was going to not want to be friends with me, who was not going to want to hire me. I didn't know, but I had to do it. And now I'm 50 now. Like, if I can't be all of me now, what the fuck am I waiting for? So, but what I found was everybody has been amazing about it. And that goes into Donnie's question about who's it for. I think originally maybe there was a part of that woman empowerment thing. But I'll tell you, who's been reaching out to me have been people, male and female, who have saying, I feel less alone. I've gotten so many messages that have that one line. I feel less alone tonight. And it's, or I can't share mine. Yeah, I can't share. But thank you for sharing yours. And that's the thing. And this is one thing, and I don't want to repeat myself, but this is one thing I say all the time. I was terrified. And I thought my secrets were going to kill me, but it's not the secrets. It was the fear of the secrets coming out. So now that I let them out, yes, there are going to be people that judge me. They're going to judge me anyway.
But you controlled the narrative.
Yeah.
Exactly. But so it's for anyone who's sorry. But the book, it's dedicated to anyone who's struggling to forgive themselves for the mistakes they made when they were just trying to survive, because we've all made mistakes and we have to freaking let them go.
Yeah.
I think Dan was going to ask a question, but before he does,
Well, I was actually just going to compare everything you said to that final battle in 8 Mile. Is it Rabbit? What the M&Ms? Because
B-Rabbit.
Yes, he threw it all out there. So he had nothing to come back with.
B-Rabbit exactly. Against Falcon. The Avenger.
But that's what it reminds me of. And I guess that's what you're basically saying, because when I said women empowerment, I feel like sometimes when you expose yourself literally and through literature, what you're doing is saying, hey, now it's all out there. So whatever you decide to make fun of, I've already said, I've already dealt with it.
That's
so you deal with it. If you want to judge me, I've already come to that place. And that's empowering for me to hear. In my own ways, I've done that artistically. And I just want to congratulate you for that.
Because
that's what it reminded me of. Like, you won the battle.
I totally get that. I totally get that.
You know, when you talk about that fear when someone would come up to you and like, oh my God, right? Like, do I know this person? Do I know them from that life? I've seen that fear. It's like every time a woman comes up to Ted and goes, Chris, I haven't seen you in 20 years. And Chris goes, oh shit. What did I do? What did I do?
That is a real thing. It's over 20 years. Thank you. Let's get
like
this straight right out
years?
The gate. Yeah. Like, that's a legit thing. I've actually had people come up and be like, hey, you used to work at such and such place. And I'd be like, I got a brother.
He had really long hair.
So I am not quite ready to get in touch with my previous life, so to speak, and have those secrets kind of known. So shut the fuck up, Donnie.
It's an amazing book, Marcy. It is something that I think everyone can relate to in some way. Because one thing I've learned through therapy is that the gross majority of the populace have not dealt with their trauma.
Yeah.
Have not dealt with their issues. And even the ones that are in therapy, which is the minority of the population, are still learning to deal with their trauma. And you have shown a lot of strength in your approach to dealing with your trauma. I'm really curious, though, from someone who, you know, was pretty much, you know, just like living a regular life, and now you have splashed onto the internet, you have splashed into bookstores, you are everywhere, and I'm curious what this has been like, this little dip into instant celebrity, if you will, because all of a sudden you are everywhere. You're getting interviewed by rock stars. You're getting interviewed on, on radio stations and TV stations.
Okay.
You're in different cities, different parts of the country. You're on a podcast every single fucking day.
You're what, here.
What is that part like for you?
Okay, first of all, come on.
Shut the fuck up and answer my question.
Okay, I will tell you that I thought I was prepared. Because I am, it's funny because I've always been like on social media, I've always kind of been like, this is me. And I curse and I dance and I lip sync and whatever. But I think once I knew my book was being published and I knew that I was going to be out there, I was kind of like, anything that I would kind of go, should I post that? I was like, okay, in 3 months, you're going to be posting, right. You're going to worry about a quote. You're going to worry about a lip sync. Like, so I really became, wow. But so I thought I was prepared, but I wasn't quite prepared because there's something about, this is the thing. I realized that I was somebody who, as much as I became in touch with myself and whatever, I was still kind of numb, became very sort of, in the more trauma you go through, even just challenges, I'm a tough girl. And tough on the outside, but I guess mush on the inside, but I kind of hide the mush. And I've been more tough lately. And this really kind of cut open those scars. And so what would happen is something, I would get a message, like somebody that I knew when I was 7 years old or a friend of my brother's or somebody would message me and go, I just bought your book. And part of me would be like, wow, awesome. And then right away I'd be like, oh my God, they're going to read it. You know, it was like, holy crap, they're going to know a lot about it. And I always say to people when they message me, I got it. I'm like, okay, you're going to learn a lot about me. I'm like, buckle up. So there's something about being that open and realizing everyone's, cause if I was going to write my book, I was going to write my book. So it's dirty and it's raw and it's truthful. Tough, but then what's also interesting and what's been tough, but not tough, it's been overwhelming in the best of ways. But when people do message, like every day I'll get messages from people, some I know, some I don't know. I just got one from the UK the other day. That's just telling me their story or saying, oh my God, you've been through so much. And then it reminds you, oh yeah, I guess I have.
Right.
And I'm just way more emotional than I thought I was going to be about.
Yeah. Or you get the message from a total stranger who thinks that because you've talked about your sex life, that your sex life should now be their sex life. And it's like, hey, Marcy, I think you're hot. Send me some dirty pictures. Those are the guys that are complete pieces of trash.
But I will say I haven't gotten as much of that as you think. People have been like, I've had it.
Don't do it, Dan.
Dan.
I'm trying not to, but here's
and I gotta be honest with you. I gotta be honest with you. If I'm getting a message from somebody from when I was 7 years old that knew me, I'm more creeped out at that, right?
No, like, it's social media, come on. That's
Dan's whole social circle.
I love it.
But it also depends what the messages are about, of course. And I just want to say, and I would probably say it's safe to say this is a message on behalf of my whole crew here, is that we've all dealt with our own sense of trauma, still going through it. We've all experienced loss. And just hearing about the amount of loss that you've experienced, and especially at the young age that you experienced it, really want to thank you for sharing. Because what I don't know if you were prepared for this, if this is what you're talking about, but I think it's only just started. What I mean by that, I think the messages are going to continue to flood into you about the changes that you're helping people to make in their own lives, knowing that they're not alone, knowing that, of course, they're not the only person in the world who's experienced trauma, but knowing that you can go through a whole lot of shit and come out on the other end a lot cleaner. And to your point, you can look back and see how shitty it was, but you're in a better place and a better person for it.
Yeah.
And you sharing that story, I know is going to help a lot of people start their own process.
I'll say one thing that I feel, and maybe it's because you, again, goes to why I shared it. I think maybe it's probably somebody would analyze me as it being someone that's been through trauma, but I feel like when I get those messages from people saying, I can't do it yet, so I'm watching you do it, as far as tell. I feel like it's going to sound crazy, but I will take the hits. I've been hit, like not physically, but I will take it. I've been bruised. I will take it if it's, and show that you can survive through it, you know, cause I've been through it. I can take it. I'm tough enough. I just want people to see that you can survive it. It's so important.
Where can they get the book?
So you can order it on Amazon. or through mm-hmm. chapters, or you can go into chapters. Just call ahead. Some of the chapters will have it in the bookstore. So and Amazon or chapters.
If they don't have it, tell them to fucking order it.
Yeah. You can see the ebook too. It's an ebook if you don't want to have a cheaper than an ebook.
Put it on your Kindle. I want to give a shout out. Because, Marcy, you and I have been friends for a while now, and I want to give a shout-out to the person that connected us, a mutual friend, and a mutual friend of Chris as well, our friend Karen Z-Man, the sexy Pringle herself, sexypringle.com. She's got a killer relationship blog. It's hilarious. And, yes, she's got a nice rack, Tid. Very well done. That's not where I was going. See, the joke there is Tid and I have known Karen for like 24 years. And every time we would see, we used to all work together at a bar. And Tid worked with her in an office. And every time we saw each other, I'd be like, hey, Karen. Hey, Z, right? And then Tid would be, show me your tits. Every single time. That's how we said hello. True?
Nice. It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. Someone's going to say but I want to give a shout out to sexypringle.com. She's also working on her own book, which I think is really cool. She's got her relationship blog that's going on.
Good.
Marcy, thank you so much for your time. As we do our extra and wrap up, I wanted to ask you, you're not prepared for this, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. If we play a little music in the background, if we play a little music in the background while the boys and I throw this one out, can you show us the fierce moves?
Oh, yeah.
Gentlemen, I want to say this has been a great episode. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Thanks to everyone out there. Remember,
100%.
This show is available on all major podcast providers. You can pick it up on our Facebook group. Clips are available on Instagram. And of course, why are you not dancing? And of course,
I'm not your pony, little show pony.
Did you not read the fucking book, you asshole?
I don't dance because you tell me to dance.
Jesus Christ.
She owns herself.
Damn right.
I'm just asking for some...
Donnie's one of those, can you please...
No, it's a ratings boost. People like to see Marcy move.
You dance, bitch.
All right.
So anyway, as I was saying, the show is available on all major podcast providers and on godfathersofpodcasting.com. Thank you, Dan. I'm about to take off my sweater.
COVID.
You can go to godfathersofpodcasting.com. You can buy our merchandise and you can pick it up. It makes a great Christmas present. Order it now. It'll get there in plenty of time. Your satisfaction guaranteed on quality and fit. You don't like it, send it back. No charge. They fix it up for you. We fix it up for you.
We don't care.
Tid doesn't care, but we care. Gentlemen, anything you want to throw before we say goodnight?
Oh, thank you so much, Marcy, for being on the show tonight. It was amazing having you. And thank you so much, Donnie, for getting the fuck out of here. Both this Donnie and the other Donnie who's out of office right now. Oh, so Trump. Glad you're out.
Should we go out on that again?
What are we going out on?
Should we go out on the Van Buren boys again with the
let's do it.
Goodbye to Donnie.
It's a big
good times, man.
Yeah.
All right. All I'm gonna say is thank you very much. It ain't a shame to be 50.
I'm
that's right.
Not when you look like that.
Tid is feeling fierce.
Thank you.
50. I'm gonna play this, and you know what, fellas? Unlike in the intro,
Fitty won.
That's true. Fuck, we didn't do a happy birthday.
Oh, no. And good night, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, go fuck yourselves.
I'm so
we gotta
stupid.
Go.
Wow.
Wait, no. Stop.
Good night. Good night. No. Good night. Good night.
I will mute your shit.
Hold on. Are you tenor?
Mother.
He's muted. Dan, we have to give him a proper happy birthday.
Is
you gotta
birthday?
Make
one. Is his birthday now?
In about, it's a, like in 2 hours.
Oh, on the 11th. Okay.
So, Dan, you need to do a quick fat. No, you're muted, asshole. Dan,
I'm usually the pony here, Marcy. That's the problem.
You need to do a quick fast Notorious TID. Ooh. You need to do a quick fast Notorious TID birthday roast before we say
a roast.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Guy. Give it to him. And then we'll go out on the fabulous styling.
Does that work? Does that work?
Do I have to mute you again?
I didn't know.
I will listen to this freely.
All right.
I'm not Russell Peters. I don't have no roast for the guy.
Thank you.
Off the top, guy.
Oh, you want a freestyle?
Yeah.
Jeez. Oh, man.
Yeah, cheese is right.
So go and eat it. And I'm going to make you beat it. If it ain't MJ, and I'm like to make you laugh. Because Danny O will rip you with every single paragraph that freestyle out of my head. How are you not dead with everything you smoke out of those bongo heads or bombs or whatever they're called? Because I'm not a weed boy. But you know that freaking tit is not no toy. I remember when you put us in a feud. Remember that dude? And he got all rude back in our wrestling days. And he would body slam me and power slam D. And goddamn, it would hurt, B. Because you don't even freaking know how to work. You freaking make it real. You're such a freaking jerk. Reaper was the star of that team. You're not a dream. You're a nightmare. You are whack, and I don't care to ever see you again. Just joking. You're my brethren. I'm going to make the roast end. And all I got to say is happy birthday. Trust me, bro. You dope in a big way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. He only says that because I know his address and he don't know mine.
But I do.
Nice.
Happy birthday, asshole. We almost got away with it.
Almost. I tried, but we're out of time. Thank you very much.
You are the king kayfaber. You're the worst.
Oh, man.
We went through my birthday episode, didn't say a fucking thing. We're not going through yours, man. You are the true unsung hero of this program. Thank you so much for everything you do each and every week, Tid. And thanks to your beautiful and lovely wife, Kelly, as she continues to deal with her mission. Make sure everyone goes to the GoFundMe page for Kelly Brown Tidwell. And this is our final fuck you of episode 32.
Bye-bye, Donnie. Your time is up, so you can take your lies and you can go get fucked. The people spoke and they spoke by mail, so pack your shit because it's time to bail. Sorry, buddy, but you lost it, mate. And like everything true, you'll call it fake. But who'd have thought you'd be such a wussy when America grabbed you by the pussy and threw you out after just one term because they finally realized that you're a germ and COVID's not the only thing you spread, like lies, fear, hate, confusion, and dread. And you told your own voters not to vote by mail in a global pandemic, and that was your fail. So shut up, Donnie, and practice what you preach. Have some dignity and give your concession speech. Just tell everyone it's a conspiracy. Blame your fall on American democracy. Make up excuses and a million reasons from your shitty press conference at the Four Seasons. Get out there and go tell more lies. Do what you do best and propagandize. No one's expecting you to be apologetic, but let me explain it using your logic. So you find more COVID when you do more tests, and you find more results when more votes get read. It's crazy, but that's how counting works. I can show you if you want to share your tax returns. You'll be fine, old mate. You survived impeachment. You survived coronavirus by injecting disinfectant. You've had 6 bankruptcies and 2 divorces, 200 days of tax-paid golf and golf courses. You survived the guilt of putting kids in cages and 26 sexual misconduct accusations. You've only got like 4,000 active lawsuits. So man up, Donnie, and hang up the boots. Fake news, fake hair, fake tan, fake smiles, fake offshore accounts in the Cayman Isles. You're a fake president with a fake first lady who's gonna take half of your fake ass money. And you finally succeeded in building your wall around the White House, and it's 10 feet tall. For someone who hates lockdown as much as you do, you were quick to lock yourself down in there, dude. Fake friends who used you to climb the ladder, and fake everything else that no longer matters. Fake supporters who piss on homeless people. You're the sworn enemy of the American Eagle, cause you tried to fool the world with no regret, and you're in $900 million debt. On the down low, if you know what I mean, like your old mate Jeffrey Epstein. Nah, you'll be fine. You've told 20,000 lies and 230,000 people have died. Just like daddy's money gave you your start. Daddy Bannon will give you a job at Breitbart. Cause no one believes your bullshit ruse, cause you're doing what you said you'd do when you lose. So see ya, buddy, you gave it a crack, and now even Fox News hasn't got your back. So sorry, old chump, but you're out of tricks, and you can suck 75 million dicks. The people voted, someone else was hired. So sorry to say it, cunt, but you're fired.
Yeah!